Today, household financial distress spreads further. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Welcome to this post covering finance and property news. Well, next Tuesday, I will be making my next live stream, and that will be a discussion specifically about my financial stress, mortgage stress, rental stress analysis. It'll be a live show, Tuesday, 8 p.m. as normal, and I'm going to devote most of the show to looking specifically at the postcode level data. And by the way, if you would like to feature a particular postcode, put a comment below and I'll make sure it's included in the show. Now, the thing about this particular conversation is that it is very much about individual granular analysis, but there is a broader story to tell as well. And today, ahead of that show on Tuesday, I'm going to outline the latest results from my surveys based on the information up to the end of December 2023. So, as normal, what we'll do is we'll walk through a high-level discussion, which will focus in at the state and segment level, and then focus on the top postcodes for each type of stress, and also end up with a little bit of discussion about some of the mapping that we've done. So, the thing to think about this is that this is an introduction ahead of next Tuesday, and in fact, to benefit the most from the Tuesday live stream, it's worth watching this show first. Now, as a quick reminder, the DFA core financial model takes information via our surveys. They're running continuously, and they flow into our modeling, which incorporates information from other sources as well, and feeds this conversation as well as other work that we do across the channel and for our clients. And we can slice and dice the data all sorts of different ways, and that's quite powerful in terms of being able to look at particular segments, for example, the young segment or the suburban segment or the multicultural establishment segment. And also we can slice and dice the data looking at property status characteristics as well, whether they're first-time buyers or whether they're refinancing or trading up or trading down or property investors, or indeed a geographic overlay as well. So it's like a Rubik's Cube. We can slice and dice the data. Now, the modeling then flows through and allows us to look at some scenarios as well, because not only are we trying to understand the current state of play, but we're also making some estimates as to how things may shake out ahead. They're not predictions, but they do illustrate some of the dynamics in the current system. And that means that we can take the mortgage stress data, the price trajectory and history data, the buying and selling intentions data from the surveys, the migration data, and also the broader economic information, including things like CPI, wages, and employment, put them through the core market model of other scenarios, and then we can, at a postcode level, or roll them up to a region, state, and an Australia level, form a view as to how things may play out ahead. And we have three scenarios: the best, the base, and the worst case scenario. And by the way, just before I go on, let me just say that I'm still running my one-to-one service. If you'd like to have a specific conversation with me about a particular area, then we can do that. But it's not specific financial advice. I can discuss my data for a given postcode or suburb and look at the underlying trends. I can assemble stress, home price, and trend data, and extract a view of my price trends ahead based on the modeling and scenarios. And it takes about an hour to have this conversation, and we can do it via Zoom or phone. Now, there is a cost involved simply because I have to do quite a lot of research to be able to do the work well. And if you're interested in contacting me, you can do that via the blog. There are limited spaces available. At the moment, we're booking still 3 to 5 weeks ahead because it takes about 3 weeks for me to do the detailed work to be able to have the detailed conversation. Anyway, if you're interested, go across the blog. Links are below. Now, let me just come back to the definition of stress. This is really important because, of course, there are lots of different ways of defining stress. Some use 30% of income, whether it's taxable or not. Other look at underwriting metrics, more like the banks use. but we define stress in cash flow terms, money in, money out. If households have more outgoings, excluding one-off discretionary items and income, we define them as stressed. If they have a mortgage, they're in mortgage stress. If renting, they're in rental stress. And we can also look at investors with cash flow pressures, and we can identify them as stressed investors. And if we take all of the information, we can roll it up and look at the estimated total financial stress for a particular southern postcode. We can express each as a percentage of households and account. The latter is best, in our view, simply because it's where the big numbers are that the main story lays. Now, just on the spectrum of household financial stress, this is a slide that the RBA delivered just before Christmas. It's actually quite useful because it does highlight the issue as to where we measure stress. And the point I want to make is that we are actually measuring stress here at the widest end of the hopper, where people have budget pressures, where they've got more money going out than money coming in. But, of course, there is a journey, because as time goes on, if things don't actually improve, then people end up with missing payments, whether that's mortgage payments or rental payments or something else. And ultimately, they could be foreclosed and end up in insolvency. So when we measure it, we're measuring it here at the beginning of the hopper. And it's worth underlining again that it can often take 2 or 3 years for households to go from that budget pressure level across to missing payments and then end up in insolvency. And it's worth just reminding yourselves that if you look at the global financial crisis in the US, the peak of the problem started in 2007, 2008. The peak of defaults, though, were actually not really coming through until 2012, 2013. So it takes a long time for this to work through, not least because, of course, people would prefer to hang on to their properties as long as possible. And secondly, there is, of course, optimism that interest rates could be cut and wages could rise. So people will do quite a lot of things to try and maintain the property that they're living in, whether it's a rented or an owned property. The point, though, is that sometimes things continue to build in a negative sense. People perhaps will extend themselves with more debt, put more on credit cards, and generally try to get through. But unfortunately, it's like a quagmire. The more you continue to walk across it, the deeper the problems can become. So this picture is actually quite valuable when it comes to locating the conversation about where we're actually looking at what's going on. So with that introduction, let's go on then and look at the mortgage stress data for December. And the first is the rental stress statistic, which again is still very high. More than 73% of those in the rental sector have cash flow problems with regard to their income and expenditure. Now, that doesn't mean they're not paying their rent, but what it does mean is that they're prioritizing rent payments over other things quite often. And we've seen this massive run-up in recent times. Of course, the average growth in rents is very high. And that, of course, is now percolating down through. A lot of investors are actually lifting rents. And that's because, of course, their costs are also rising too. And the costs of living, of course, are a burdensome problem. Now, looking at the mortgage stress, well, mortgage stress is now 50.2% of households. And they're the borrowing households with a mortgage. And it's interesting to see how that's grown. Once again, before the COVID crisis hit back in February 2020, we had 32.9% of households in mortgage stress. So there's significant growth. And interestingly, the rate of growth is easing compared with where it was more recently. But it still means that half of people are in some difficulty. Now, the other thing on this chart is the household debt ratio. This is from the RBA. They updated it to September recently, and they've reported it now at 185.4. Now, that is a little meaningless, but it's the ratio of income to debt. And what I'd say there is that, of course, only 1/3 of households actually have a mortgage. So you really need to multiply by 3 to get a decent average, which is sort of 5 to 6 times. And that is much more in line with the debt to income ratios that we are seeing in the market. And the growth pattern is quite clear. If you go back to 2021, we were at 120, give or take. Now we're at 185. So you can see there that the growth is significant. And that, of course, is driven by the debt income ratio going adverse, home prices moving much more than average incomes, lending standards allowing for more people to get more into debt. So that's an important qualifying conversation when it comes to understand why we are where we are. So then now let's look at the latest data. This information is to the end of December. And the first information set we have here is actually to do with the states. So we start with the number of households, then the number in mortgage stress, rental stress, investor stress, and overall financial stress. And then we express those in percentage terms as well. And I'm going to just briefly speak about the relative percentages, not without the caveat, as I said, that the big numbers, of course, tell the story better. Nevertheless, you can see there that those in yellow are reporting higher mortgage stress than last month. Those in the blue have seen a slight easing. So in the ACT, New South Wales, the NT and Queensland, mortgage stress is down a little, but it's rising in South Australia, Tasmania, Victoria and Western Australia. And overall, it's gone up. And I would highlight that the highest state stress for mortgage is in Tasmania at 65.44%. Not surprising, given the massive run-up we had in home prices over recent years. Of course, in the last 12 months or so, home prices have gone into reverse in Tasmania quite significantly. I'd also make the point that those adjustments down are relatively limited. But one of the things that has happened is that people have been able to refinance and get a lower mortgage. And we've also had some improvement, particularly in low pay, which is helping at the margins. And if I go over to rental stress, most states saw a slight fall, other than Queensland, which saw a significant rise. And again, the rental stress adjustments are to do with the slight rise in lower pay that we're seeing coming through. The stressed investors are still having significant issues, particularly in the ACT, Northern Territories, Queensland, and Tasmania. A little bit of an easing in some other states. And the overall financial stress at 49.77% translates to overall 4.8 million households out of the 9.76 million in our surveys. And looking at financial stress, stress in Queensland is rising and in Tasmania is rising. And financial stress in other states eased back slightly, just slightly, this last time around. If we then look at it by our segments, and those segments are defined by DFA based on some geo-demographic information. It's a multifactorial analysis that we do to segment households. And you can see there that the young growing families has the highest amount of mortgage stress. Out of the 726,000 young growing families, 304,000 are in mortgage stress. That's 90.4%. And I would just highlight the fact that, of course, not all households are borrowing. So when you actually make a comparison between the mortgage stress and the households, there is an interim step, which I haven't shown on the chart, which is borrowing households. So 90.46% of borrowing young growing families are in mortgage stress. That includes a lot of first-time buyers. And then we have a lot on the urban fringe, and those are categorized as battling urban at 82.2% and disadvantaged fringe at 74.22%. And it is true to say that a lot of those who are in stress are in the urban fringe, in often new developments in the high growth corridors. And as we'll see when we look at the stress data in more detail, A lot of it is in the high growth corridors. Looking at the rental stress, significantly it's the young affluents and also the multicultural establishment, the first generation Australians who are actually experiencing the worst of it. And in fact, 83% of the multicultural establishment are actually in difficulty. That's nearly 200,000 households. And interestingly, quite a few of those people have moved into the country and moved into rental accommodation and then got into difficulty quite quickly. If we look at the stressed investors, we can see there that the young affluents and the exclusive professionals are the two categories with the highest amount of investor stress. Now, investor stress measures the money in, money out on the investment properties. And of course, exclusive professionals and young affluents tend to have a much larger count of properties in their property portfolios. And my observation is that the young affluents often go in boots and all and then get into difficulty quite quickly because, of course, when you look at the mortgage issue on the investment property and take account of the cost of the mortgage as well as the maintenance costs and the management costs of the investment property, then quite often they're in some difficulty. And about 60% of property investors are underwater in cash flow terms. Now, if you're holding property and hoping for a capital appreciation later, that might be okay. But for many people, this is a big problem. One of the reasons why we are seeing more investment properties coming onto the market, particularly actually in and around Melbourne. And of course, the regulations are tightening the noose, needing effectively things like fire alarms and other things to be in place, which is putting more expenses on property investors. And the financial stress metric, the last metric, shows that it's the battling urban and the young growing families that hold the record for the financial stress. 71% of young growing families are actually in financial stress. That's more than 500,000. And 60% of the battling urban are in financial stress, 255,000, but 53% of the disadvantaged fringe at 913,000 are actually the largest segment. I also highlight that the suburban mainstream, which is a big segment, at 45.5%, also has 777,000 in financial stress. So these are big numbers. And overall, that's 4.8 million households in some degree of financial stress in cash flow terms, and that is pretty much a record. If we then turn to mortgage stress first, we can look briefly at the household count in mortgage stress, and we start with the largest number of households in mortgage stress, which is in Campbelltown, postcode 2560, with more than 12,300. And then we go to Western Australian postcode 6065, and then Victorian postcode 3064 with just over 11,600. Then we go to Toowoomba in Queensland, 4350. And then come back to New South Wales, postcode 2170, Liverpool. And then we go back down to Victorian, postcode 3805, Fountain Gate, Narrow Warren. And back to New South Wales and Camden, 2570. Victorian postcode 3029, which is Hoppers Crossing. And Cranbourne, 3977, which includes, of course, various areas in and around that area, including Skye and Den Meadows. Then postcode 6163 in Western Australia. And postcode 3810 in Victoria, Pakenham. And then Berwick and Harkaway, 3806 in Victoria. And then regional postcode 3350, Ballarat. And back to New South Wales, including Riverston and Marsden Park, postcode 2765. And even there, we have 9,200 households in mortgage stress. And I want to make the point that some of these are now reporting 100%. Now, from a distributional perspective, the survey grosses up, so we're plus or minus 2%. But of course, it's a big number. Whereas in other postcodes, the numbers are a little lower. But the real observation here is that whether you're looking at places like Tapping or Narrow Warren, or Cranbourne or Pakenham, all of those are high growth corridors with lots of relatively new property, lots of home and land packages being sold, and a lot of people against the wall. We then look at rental stress. Same process. The centre of Melbourne, postcode 3000, has the highest count at 14,656. Then we go to Toowoomba, postcode 4350, followed by Liverpool, 2170, and then postcode 4215 up in Queensland, which includes Southport and Labrador. And then Point Cook and Derrimont and Werribee, postcode 3030 in Victoria. Back to Waterloo and Zetland in postcode 2017. Then postcode 3029, Tarnett, Hoppers Crossing in Victoria. And back to New South Wales postcode at Campbelltown, 2560. And even here, we've got more than 9,700 households in difficulty. Then we go to Ipswich, postcode 4305. Coomera, postcode 4209, again in Queensland. Back to Mount Druitt, 2770 New South Wales. Blacktown, postcode 2148. And then up to Queensland, postcode 4207. Then postcode 2145 in New South Wales, Wentworthville. Parramatta, 2150. Gosford, postcode 2250. And just off the bottom of the page there is Cranbourne as well. And then if we turn to stressed investors, not surprisingly, postcode 3000, centre of Melbourne, has the highest count at more than 4,670. This is, of course, the yin and the yang related to the rental stress we saw before. Then we get a postcode 2145, Wentworthville, New South Wales. Postcode 3977 at Cranbourne in Victoria. Up to Ryde 2110 in New South Wales. One of the reasons, by the way, why investment properties in Ryde are falling in value at the moment. Then we go to 2121 and Epping, New South Wales. Postcode 2011, Rushcutters Bay and Elizabeth Bay, New South Wales. And another New South Wales postcode 2155, Kellyville and Rouse Hill. And again, New South Wales is up on the list with postcode 2066, Lane Cove. And then we go to Queensland, Surfers Paradise, 4217, back to Campbelltown in New South Wales, 2560. And then we go to the Northern Beaches, places like DY and Cromer, Curl Curl, postcode 2099. Now to Queensland, 4655, including Craignish. And then back to Surrey Hills and Darlinghurst, postcode 2010. Hornsby, 2077, again in New South Wales. Postcode 2770 in New South Wales, Mount Druitt, Lethbridge Park. And then back up to Queensland, 4101 Highgate Hill, South Brisbane and West End. And postcode 4209, Coomera and Willow Vale. So putting it all together, this gives the final readout for financial stress, with Toowoomba, postcode 4350 at the top, with more than 27,500 households in difficulty. That's 58% of households. Then we come to Liverpool, 2170, and there more than 25,000 households are in financial stress. Then Campbelltown, 2560, followed then by Victorian postcode 3029, Tarnett and Hoppers Crossing. Then Cranbourne, 3977, Roxburgh Park, 3064, then the centre of Melbourne, postcode 3000, and then Point Cook and Derrimont, 3030, again a Victorian postcode, back to New South Wales, Mount Druitt and Lethbridge Park, 2770, then over to the west to postcode 6163, which includes Sampson, Hamilton Hill, North Coogee, North Lake, and Spearwood, then back to Queensland, postcode 4305, including Ipswich. And then another regional postcode, 3350 Ballarat in Victoria. Then back to Bellwood Park in Queensland, 4300. Then back to Blacktown, postcode 2148 in New South Wales, with more than 16,420 households exposed. Then back to Wentworthville, postcode 2145, including Grey Staines and Westmead. And then Tapping in Western Australia, 6065. Followed then by Labrador in Queensland, 4215, and Launceston in Tasmania, postcode 7250, with more than 15,160 households showing up. So you can see here that we are seeing a concentration in those high growth areas. And perhaps no surprise, given the fact that many people bought relatively recently when mortgage rates were very low, or when rents were lower, and of course both the interest rates on mortgages and the rentals have gone up at the time when inflation has been high, real cost of living has been very strong, whereas real income growth has been negative because of the inflationary pressures. And by the way, of course, we also know that the tax take has been another problem, with the amount of tax that people are paying also going through the roof. So all of this comes together to explain why we have the pressures we have. And again, I'll make the point, it doesn't mean that people are going to fall over tomorrow, but it does put pressure on households into the future. And if the situation with regard to inflation, interest rates and rent rises don't ease back, then more of these people are going to get into deeper difficulty ahead. Now, one of the other things we can also look at is default risk. Now, this is a forward-looking estimate, so it's not baked in, but it does give us a bit of a flavour of where the risk of defaults are highest. And so the postcode with the highest risk of default is Cranbourne postcode 3977 in Victoria, with a risk of 5% defaults, with more than 1,100 households risking default over the next 12 months. Then we have another Victorian postcode, 3029, including Hobbs Crossing, Tarnit. Then we go across to the west to 6210, including Mandurah and other places in that area. It's worth highlighting the fact here that, of course, this is a long-term problem. Peak prices were way back, and many households are in negative equity as well, which doesn't help at all. Then we can look at Victorian postcode 3064, with just over 700 households risking default. And then Western Australian postcode 6112, Armidale. Then WA postcode 6164, Success. And I'll just make the point that these Western Australian postcodes are actually showing signs of difficulty because of long-standing issues. Remember that house prices peaked in some areas quite a long time ago. And whilst there has been some recovery in some areas of Perth, it's not been uniform. So people have been in distress for quite some time, and therefore the default levels are continuing to rise. Then we go to New South Wales postcode 2550, Gosford, followed by Toowoomba 4350, Tapping in Western Australia, Yatala postcode 4207 in Queensland, and then Bundaberg postcode 4670 in Queensland, with just over 500 risking default. Now, risk of default doesn't mean they will default, but it shows that they are further down that path towards risking default later. Now, let me talk about the scenarios. This is the other point that's really worth talking to, insofar that the scenarios are trying to get to what happens from here. And the point about scenarios is that they are not cast in stone. So they're not predictions, they're not forecasts, but they are scenarios. And the point about the scenarios is they're a way of exploring different futures and considering the consequences, not a forecast, as I say, but it helps to facilitate understanding and debate and the moving parts. None of these scenarios may turn out to be right. Things change, but we do use the framework from our core market model, and we look at those potential outcomes updated with the latest data and results. And these scenarios are basically running forward from now. So if we look at the scenarios, the best case scenario, I call that the Goldilocks zone, is that we see rates staying at 4.35%, but falling through 2024, and inflation eases ahead of the RBA expectations, while wages rise faster. We don't get a recession in Australia, but migration remains quite strong. So that would be the best set of scenarios that would mean that effectively people would see price rises strong. The base case, the soft landing scenario, is that we still see a further rise in interest rates, perhaps to 4.6%, which means higher mortgage rates ahead. And rates stay high into 2024, but inflation stays above target until 2025, which is what the RBA, by the way, is actually forecasting. We don't get a recession in Australia, but we do get a fall in migration. And the net of that is that we then see less potential for house price rises. The third scenario is our nightmare scenario. And here we see rates rising above 4.6%, which will give even higher mortgage rates. They'll stay high into 2024 along with inflation, but unemployment now starts to rise and wages growth stalls because we get a recession in Australia. Interest rates are then cut later. Perhaps the RBA overreacts or maybe is slow to react, we'll see. But migration also drops below the long-term average. And in that scenario, home price falls are more significant. And here is just a recap of the overall scenario. If you want more detail, then go look at a show that I did the other day when I went into significantly more detail with regard to the various scenarios in terms of home prices, and also looked at what other economists and even the property portals were saying about price expectations. And here is a way of presenting it. So we look at the house and unit scenarios, the best, base, and worst. Those are the three scenarios. And you can see that over the next 12 months in the best case scenario, on average, house prices could be 5% higher in the best case scenario, and units 4.3% higher in the best case scenario. Looking out over the next 3 years and cumulatively speaking, if that trend continues, then we'd be looking at around 14.8% up for houses in the best case scenario and units 12.8%. The base case scenario shows almost no movement of 0.7% slide over 12 months for houses and 0.6% for units, but over 3 years, a small fall down 4% for houses and units. And the worst case scenario would be a more considerable drop, with a 3 year scenario fall of 26% for houses and 22% for units. Now, I will stress again that these are not definitive. They are just trying to give you some sense of the relative sensitivities, because obviously, as I've discussed in previous shows, what happens to migration, what happens to government policy, what happens to interest rates, lending standards, all of those things will feed in to the question of where prices go from this point. And the point about this is that really you can't talk generically about this. What you need to do is to look at individual suburbs and postcodes, because that's when things get real. And on that basis, what I do is produce this picture for each postcode. And there's more than 2,000 postcodes in my model. And not only do we get information about the mortgage stress and rental stress and stressed investors at the postcode level and the types of houses, all those things, but we also then look at the price scenarios and we show the relative movement on the best, base, and worst case, both for units and for houses. And so on Tuesday, what we're going to do is to dive into these postcodes. And so if you're interested in information about a particular postcode, put that postcode in the comments below and I'll then incorporate them, or you can come on live and throw your request into the chat live and I'll try and get through them. We normally cover maybe 30 or 40 postcodes over the show. So that's the best way to interact with me with regard to the more granular data. As I've said several times, the granularity is critical if we're really going to understand what's going on. Now, before I close, I will just do one other thing, and that is just to share a little bit of the mapping that I've done, because the mapping is another way of presenting the same information. It's just showing it in a rather different approach. So here is the information for Sydney, and this information is at the end of December, based off the modelling, exactly like last time. So as we pull out, we can see that, in fact, the stress levels do vary by postcode, and that's a very important observation when it comes to trying to understand what's really going on. And as we pull out further, we can see there that the yellows turns into oranges and into reds. So places like Liverpool and Blacktown are more stressed. And as we pull out further, we can see that there's the Ring of Fire to the west of Sydney. Much, much more significant. But I also highlight that closer in, there are some postcodes which are still showing quite high counts of mortgage stress. I'm now going to look at the Melbourne story. And once again, it's a similar story with some areas more impacted than others. As we pull out from the centre of Melbourne, we can see there that the number of postcodes with more adverse stress, remember I'm expressing this as the count of households, not the percentage, shows that in the west we've got a hotspot in 3029. And as we pull out further, postcode 3064 to the north, and then the whole bunch of them, 3805, 3806, all of those areas around there are also now being hit. And if we pull out into regional Australia, you can see that places like Ballarat are also showing up. So it's, again, a story of it depends. It depends where you are. And down here, many of the postcodes are in high growth corridors where people have moved quite recently, often homeland packages, have very large mortgages, and also significant outgoings because the infrastructure isn't necessarily that great locally. If I look at Brisbane now, and remember that the population counts are a little lower in Brisbane, we see a somewhat similar story with the centre of Brisbane not looking too bad. But if you pull out, you start to see some more troublesome spots. And as you pull out further, then you can begin to see the significant areas. Ipswich, of course, comes up, as you perhaps not be surprised, given what I said earlier on. But there are other areas too, 4034, 4300, 4152. And as we pull out further, we can still see that there are a number of areas down in the Gold Coast where there are also issues. And if I pull the story up towards the Sunshine Coast, again, the counts are lower, but what's interesting is that we still have areas where there are a number of people who are in some difficulty. Now, if I go to Adelaide, again, lower counts, but once again, it's a similar story. There are areas where there are problems. And as you pull out from the centre of Adelaide, you can see that some of the areas to the east and to the south are more troublesome. And overall, again, it's an interesting patchwork. Not all areas equally impacted, but some quite significantly impacted. If I go to the centre of Perth, similar exercise. And once again, we find that close in, many of the areas around Perth are not doing too badly. But if you start pulling out, Woodlands 6018 jumps out as a problem. And then a few others to the north there, 6018, 6061. And as we pull out further, we start to see more troubled areas. 6163 is a particular standout, close to Fremantle. And south of Perth, 6155, 6164. And if we go out a little further, you can see that north and south of Perth, we have issues. And even down in Rockingham, there are, again, quite high counts. If we go to Tasmania and drill in on Hobart, of course, the counts are lower here, but there are still quite hot pockets, particularly the north of Hobart there. And still in Tasmania, it's also worth highlighting that the areas around Launceston are also registering quite severe levels of stress. And of course, Launceston and Hobart are the two hotspots in Tasmania. Elsewhere, there are levels of stress, but the counts are lower because the population density is a lot lower across the island. And finally, we'll just look at Darwin. Darwin, of course, again, has quite low counts, so you would expect the colours to be more in the bluey end rather than the orangey end, which is sort of true. But even so, as you pull out, you can start to see that there are some areas where there are more concerns, particularly in the area around Palmerston. Now, I won't go through the rental stress mapping and the other maps I have. If you find the mapping really interesting, let me know, put some comments below, and I'll make another show specifically on looking at rental stress mapping or investor stress mapping, or indeed the default mapping more broadly, because I do have maps for all those too. Now, before I close, let me just make a few final observations. One of the things I always try to do is to provide information to people about what they can do if they've got financial pressures. And I recommend the National Debt Helpline on 1-800-007-007. This is a government-funded initiative, and there are financial counsellors there who can actually provide guidance and help with regard to getting into difficulty. The reason I say this is because if you're not careful and you do a sort of search on Google or something like that, you can often find firms who are happy to take your money and provide advice. But of course, the last thing that those in financial flow difficulty should be doing is paying for advice. So the National Debt Helpline is a really good resource. And the other resource that I mention quite often in my shows is the Smart Money website, where ASIC has quite useful tools, particularly cash flow management tools. And the reason that's important is because the first thing that households need to do if they've got cash flow issues is to understand where the money is coming in and where it's going out to. Money in, money out. And less than half of the households in my surveys actually have a sense of that. So this is quite an important tool. First, understand where your cash flows are. And then second, you can prioritize and plan. And one of the things I often say at this point is remember that, of course, more debt doesn't necessarily help. And remember that if you talk to your bank, and you should talk to the bank if you've got a mortgage or in difficulty, remember the bank is always going to shape the strategy based on what's best for them if you've got a mortgage. And of course, if you have a rental situation where you have a cash flow problem, often renters are not willing to share that information very widely, particularly with their landlord. But it is sometimes worth trying to see whether you can get an agreement for no further rent rises over a period of time, because, of course, that's something that can help. But one of the things we do see in our information flows quite often from our surveys is that renters are now looking for cheaper places, travelling further, living in less salubrious contexts to try and get by, which is not necessarily a good outcome, but sometimes it's the only outcome. So the bottom line is this. We are definitely towards peak stress at the moment. I think there will be some further rises. My expectation is that the RBA will not be cutting rates anytime soon. I wouldn't be surprised to see some of the lending standards eased back. And I expect to see more initiatives from government. Remember, there are elections ahead to try and coax more people to come into the property market. But of course, be very cautious about that. Often households have overcommitted. That's one of the reasons why stress is so high at the moment. So if you are thinking of purchasing, make sure you create buffers. And frankly, the cash flow problems that we're seeing here won't ease easily over the next 12 to 18 months. Interest rates will probably come down a bit eventually. Hopefully, inflation will ease back. And hopefully, wages growth will also take off a little bit. But of course, the tax take remains very high, almost at a record high for many people. And that means that many people will continue to go backwards, not just for the next few months, but maybe the next few years, which was why my own view is that this high level of stress is going to be with us for a long time, which means, unfortunately, we're going to have to find strategies to live with it, which will probably be subject of another show. So, thanks for following through, and I hope you found that interesting and informative. I'll find a reminder again that our live show is this coming Tuesday, 8 p.m. Sydney. And if you'd like a particular postcode spotlit, send it through in the chat, and I'll make sure it's on the list. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.